The other day, someone asked about tips and tricks for bringing a continuity to our practice on retreat. And we offered a few thoughts that evening. And really, this question of continuity of practice, how do we, in between times, I think as Greg called it, the in-betweening practice, cultivate this mindful awareness, the practice of being with what it means to be human while chopping vegetables, while making one's bed, while eating, while walking, while spacing out, while doing anything. And really, this practice of in-betweening is the practice that most connects with our normal lives, most connects with what it means to bring this practice right into the midst of the activities of our lives. One of my teachers, Saito Tejaniya, often talked about just practicing awareness while walking or doing things. You know, somebody asked him one time, "Saito, how do you practice walking meditation?" He said, "I don't practice walking meditation. I practice awareness while walking." And so this is more the flavor in daily life. We practice awareness while living. So what does that mean? How do we do that? That's what I'd like to explore with you today as we have our last evening together, our last time together, the next less than 24 hours left together. How do we practice awareness while living? Often, I think, in particular around challenging situations, you know, things happen really fast in daily life. Thoughts, emotions, reactions, while we're engaged in conversations or activities, things happen so fast. And so people often feel like it's hard to break in there, hard to actually become mindful in the midst of challenging or difficult situations. That's one common place where people say, "This is hard." And another comment that people often make about daily life practice is, "I don't have time to do that." You know, it's like, "I've got a lot of things to do. I don't have time to be mindful." And I understand that sentiment. I understand what that means in a way, because often we think about our practice as being something extra or something we're doing. And if that's how we're engaged with it, is something else to do in our lives, another thing to add to the busyness of our lives, then very often it just doesn't fit. We have to take care of our families, and we have to work at for our livelihood. We have to take care of our bodies, and like, where does being mindful fit in? And so this is a really crucial piece. So one of the most helpful supports for bringing mindfulness right into the midst of daily life is to begin to understand it not as something extra or not as something that weighs something. You know, we feel like, "Oh, mindfulness, okay, I've really loved doing this week. Let me pick up the backpack of mindfulness and carry it around with me everywhere I go." And that backpack we often think of as being very heavy. So if we think of it as something extra, if it feels heavy to us to consider doing or being, practicing mindfulness throughout our day, we're probably not going to be doing it. And so two key reframings, perhaps, or explorations: keep it really light and see if there's ways you can make it interesting. For myself, these two pieces have really supported my practice in daily life. If I am really interested in understanding something through the way that mindfulness can inform our understanding, if I'm interested, the mindfulness is more easily available. So it's not about brute force efforting. It's about interest. That's one piece. And then the light touch. So I'm going to start with the light touch. The other day when we were talking about the tips for continuity, one of them that Greg mentioned was just noticing the moment of when we become mindful. I would say this single practice, because it kind of is a practice in a way, just recognizing those moments when mindfulness is there. This single practice is the main thing that I explore in daily life. Mindfulness, you see in sitting meditation, right? You're sitting in sitting meditation, your mind wanders. Mindfulness returns. It's a moment when we remember mindfulness. First thing I'd like you to think about with that moment: how hard was it? Did you even do it? Did it take you any effort at all to come back? You didn't do anything to have it come back. It just came back. If you can begin to connect with, in sitting meditation, it's a great place to recollect, oh, mindfulness is back in that moment. That moment is a moment of effortless mindfulness. If we can be interested in that moment rather than judging ourselves for the fact that we weren't mindful for the previous few moments or minutes or however long it was, if instead of judging ourselves there, we can just begin to, oh, mindfulness is back. What is that like? Recognize mindfulness returning. As we explore this, we can do this in sitting practice, we can do this in daily life, because the sense of becoming aware of kind of a base definition of mindfulness might be just knowing what's happening while it's happening. Through this week, you've really been getting a sense of what it means to be present, what it means to be mindful, what it means to be aware. And that moment of remembering can help us to really also highlight that quality of being awake, of being aware. Because in that moment when mindfulness returns, there's a little bit of a contrast, perhaps. We see that there's a difference between being there, being present, and what was happening moments before, where the mind was kind of lost in a field of thoughts or sunk into an emotion. So what's that? What is that experience of being mindful? The more we can highlight that moment, the more we can just be curious about what does it feel like for mindfulness to come back and kind of just connect with it. It's like, oh, there's mindfulness again. Oh, there's mindfulness again. If we can explore that in our daily lives, you know, you'll notice it way more. As Greg said, you know, it's like way more than you think. You'll be walking across the street and there you are, walking across the street. You know you're walking across the street. You're driving down the freeway and suddenly, we come back. There I am. There is presence of mind. Reaching for a glass. Talking on the phone. This moment of remembering happens a lot. So this moment really does emphasize the lightness of the possibility of practice in daily life, because it doesn't take us any effort to do this. It doesn't take us much effort. There's a little bit of effort to actually, you know, recognize or connect with, oh yes, mindfulness is back. A little bit of effort to recognize that we have become aware. What I often suggest in that moment, it's a little bit, it's different than I suggest on retreats, actually. You know, on retreats, when we become aware, there's a little bit more kind of, connect with that. You know, see if you can continue that awareness or keep that practice going. In daily life, often what I suggest is just get on with your day. You've noticed a moment of mindfulness, just get on with your day. Don't pick up mindfulness at that point and say, okay, I'm going to be mindful now. Just get on with your day. There'll be another one that comes along. There'll be another moment of mindfulness that comes along, and you can connect in that moment. The recognition, or the kind of highlighting this moment of remembering, in my experience, what I've seen happening is as we recognize them, as we get familiar with what it feels like to be mindful, it's like those moments of remembering start to point themselves out to us. They like highlight themselves. And we start to get way more of them because we're familiar with that experience of what it means for mindfulness to return. So this is my number one favorite, most helpful tool for mindfulness in daily life. We can also, let me think. I've got stuff here. I've got a lot of stuff here. It's all right, I'll say this one. I won't edit yet. So sometimes if we find it's a little bit, if we find that we're not remembering to highlight the moment of remembering, if we've just completely forgotten about that one, then another way to begin to insert a lightness of mindfulness through the day. This was actually my very first mindfulness practice. Pick something that happens regularly through your day, something you do a lot. The other day, Greg suggested reaching. I would say in daily life practice, that's really advanced, to try to be aware every time you reach. I like to suggest something that, you know, pick something that happens every, I don't know, two, three times an hour. Wherever you are, if you're sitting in front of a computer a lot, you could pick, opening an application or clicking send for an email or just something that you do. Or it might be opening doors, turning on lights, just something that happens regularly through your day. And this is, you know, part of the challenge with daily life practice is that we lose a lot of the reminders about practicing. You know, we're sitting in the meditation hall. We have a lot of reminders. You know, when our minds wander and we wake up to that moment of remembering, there's a lot of reminders actually to help us connect with that moment of remembering in our sitting practice. First of all, we're sitting still with our eyes closed. Our minds are wandering off, having some conversation 3 weeks ago, and mindfulness returns, and we're sitting still with our eyes closed. It's much harder to delude ourselves into thinking we really are having that conversation. the stillness of the body, the fact that our eyes are closed, they themselves help us to recognize, oh yeah, I'm not having that conversation. I'm actually sitting here and my intention is to be meditating. So that helps us to wake up, helps us to connect with that moment of remembering and reconnect with our experience. In our daily lives, pretty much all of the reminders, or many of the reminders, go away. And so we're kind of out there on our own. You know, we are walking down the street and thinking about what we need to do tomorrow and what we did yesterday and how that impacts us. And, you know, this is our life. Much harder to kind of recognize the coming out of that as we're getting out of our car and actually have a moment of mindfulness as we're getting out of a car and walking to the grocery store. It's much harder to kind of connect with that because we're walking to the grocery store and we're thinking about, what do I need in the grocery store? So whew, that moment of kind of highlighting that moment of, oh, here I am getting out of the car, it vanishes quickly because of the plan of what we need to be doing next. So it's this is hard. This is really hard, this daily life practice. And so if we can kind of connect a practice with a light touch, I have to emphasize the light touch throughout, with things that you do regularly, as some of those things I suggested, turning on light switches, standing up, sitting down, walking through doorways, clicking send, touching your phone, some things you do all the time. If you can basically just resolve, okay, this is what I want to try to wake up for. I want to see if I can know that I'm picking up my phone when I'm picking up my phone. I want to know that I'm going through doorways when I'm going through doorways. So there's kind of a little bit of a resolve or an intention that we set our practice around. And then you'll go through your day and you'll walk through a lot of doorways and you'll pick up your phone a lot and you will not remember. You won't remember a lot of them. And yet, at the end of the day, you know, if you kind of bookend your day with, okay, what's my intention around practice? Oh, right, I said I was going to notice when I picked up my phone. Wow, I remembered that maybe twice today. Okay, now that moment right there, you know, when you have brought the practice back into your mind, there you've got a moment of mindfulness, a moment of remembering. So in that moment, just take in, okay, yep, I'm here now. Didn't remember those moments. Those are gone. Can't go back and do those. But right here, right now, I can connect with whatever's happening. And then, in a light way, just remind yourself, yep, I'm just going to keep trying this. Just going to keep connecting with this. This is the parami of resolve. Resolve, in my experience, this parami of resolve in daily life, this isn't resolve, grab on, force yourself to do something. It's a resolve that just keeps reminding you, yep, this is important. I'm going to keep trying. And it's got that kind of tone to it. I'm just going to keep trying. No matter how many times I forgot today, how many times I didn't remember, I'm just going to keep trying. So that kind of resolve builds a little bit of a momentum around the task that you've selected. And at least this was actually my very first mindfulness practice, this kind of thing. I was not interested in sitting meditation, but I was interested in bringing mindfulness into daily life. And this activity of picking something that happened regularly through my day was my very first mindfulness practice. And what I noticed was I selected something. It was switching between DOS and Windows on my computer. That was a long time ago. And every time, the first day, you know, the very first day, I had this in my mind. Okay, this is what I'm going to do. I was making my bed at night, and I remembered I didn't remember once. And to my credit, that at that moment, I didn't like beat myself up. I said, oh, well, I'll try again tomorrow. Can it have that quality? Oh, well, kind of like what the happy Sayadaw says about wandering mind. It's like, wandering mind, never mind. It's like, oh, well, but then follow that never mind with, I'll try again. I'll try again. Oh, well, I'll try again tomorrow. I've got another chance. I've got many chances. And I did that. The next day, I think I remembered, like, I remembered at lunchtime. Oh, all morning I forgot. But I'd remembered in the middle of the day. The next day, I think it was like two or three times during the day. It wasn't that I was remembering while I was doing it, but I was remembering that I hadn't remembered to do it. This is part of how it works. You know, it's not that it's a failure that you're not remembering to remember. You're remembering that you didn't remember. In that moment of remembering that you didn't remember, that's mindfulness too. That is a moment of remembering that I just spoke about. It's a moment of, oh, mindfulness is back. So what's happening? The light touch. Oh, here I am, standing up, walking to the drinking fountain. Oh, didn't remember the last 10 times I switched between DOS and Windows. Oh, but here I am, walking to the drinking fountain. In that moment when you remember that you've forgotten in that situation, just notice what's obvious. You know, just take it in. It's like, okay, here I am. And get on with your day. Take in that moment of awareness. It will support you to notice. And again, it's pretty light that you remember that you've forgotten. You didn't have to try to do that. It just happened. The resolve of, oh, well, I'll try again tomorrow. There's some sense of connection to the intention there. That's a little bit of, yeah, gotta keep trying this. If you say, oh, well, and don't connect to, yeah, I'm going to keep trying, probably it will just fall away. So there is some amount of connection to that intention with that resolve. So at some point, what I found over the course of playing with this particular activity of switching between DOS and Windows, it maybe took about a week or something before I was noticing the moment of switching between DOS and Windows on my computer. And it wasn't like it was any earth-shattering thing. It was just like, wow, here I am. I'm here while this is happening. But the cool thing about it was, after that, for some period of time, that activity itself became a mindfulness bell. It's like it started waking me up, even if I was like lost in the stream of thoughts of what I was doing before and what I needed to do to switch between, what I needed to do after I switched to the other application. It's like, whew, switching between DOS and, oh, moment of mindfulness. So this is a power too about picking some activities that they begin to become triggers for mindfulness. They begin to wake us up. So at some point, when it gets to the place, maybe a week, maybe two for a particular activity, pick another one. And slowly you'll start to accumulate these things that you're walking through a doorway and it wakes you up. You're turning on a light switch and it wakes you up. So just some simple reminders that we cultivate through this practice of resolve. Then people are often curious or interested. So, you know, so far I've mostly just been talking about the simplicity of becoming mindful in daily life. But mostly people are really interested in, how do I become mindful in the midst of something challenging? You know, how can I bring this right into the messiness of life? So this is a challenge. You know, right in the midst of our life, you know, things happen pretty fast. Thoughts, emotions, reactions, it happens like that. We see it in sitting practice, how fast it happens. In sitting, we have the opportunity to kind of take the time when we feel something happening, right? We feel an emotion arise. We can take the time. Oh, an emotion. Let me feel it in my body. Let me see what's here. Let me notice it. We're having a conversation with a partner, or we're having a heated exchange with a coworker, and, you know, anger arises, reactivity arises. It's not like we're going to say to our coworker, oh, wait a minute. Let me stop. Let me turn to my experience in the body. So can we learn other ways to do this? Again, you know, I want to name the things that make it hard. And so what often happens, because we have that feeling of, you know, I can't just stop the conversation to turn to the body and practice mindfulness the way I do on retreat. So that means mindfulness isn't possible in this situation. That's the idea we have. So I'd like to suggest we can just notice what's obvious in that situation. Actually, I'm going to suggest a couple things here. So the busyness of our lives makes this challenging. And, you know, here we are practicing and cultivating mindfulness in the most ideal of circumstances. You know, we think going on retreat and practicing mindfulness is really hard. It is. You know, we see a lot. We see our minds, and it's so humbling. It is so humbling to sit on retreat for a week. And yet the conditions are ideal for cultivating this quality of mindfulness. Where you're going tomorrow into your daily lives, this is the advanced retreat you're going to. You're going to where it's really hard to cultivate mindfulness. So we've got the ideal conditions here for cultivating the skill of mindfulness. It's like, you know, if we want to cultivate any skill, what do? We break it down. We figure out the parts. You know, we want to learn how to play basketball. We first learn the rules. We maybe practice on our own dribbling, shooting baskets. You know, we wouldn't think, oh, let me learn how to play basketball. Let me insert myself into the middle of the finals of the NBA. You know, no. You know, we wouldn't even think that. But we do think, oh, I've learned mindfulness here, so let me go practice in the midst of daily life. And we feel like we failed when we can't do it, or it didn't work on retreat. We've learned some of the basic skills here. What do we do to cultivate and develop a skill? You know, with basketball, we'd first learn the rules, then we'd practice on our own. Then maybe we'd practice with someone who's just going to feed us the balls and do a little blocking with us. Somebody who's friendly, who kind of knows we're just learning. And then maybe we might do a game with friends who aren't going to run us over before we step into something more real, a pickup game or whatever. So we know that we need practice in things like basketball. We also need practice in things like bringing mindfulness into our lives. So the most structured form of practice is the sitting meditation and is the retreat practice. In daily life, the next kind of step, if we follow the basketball analogy, would be finding ways to be interested in bringing mindfulness at times or places when you're alone. So, you know, pick some times in your day where you can put a big reminder, like washing dishes or loading the dishwasher. Put a big reminder on the dishwasher. Practice mindfulness while you're doing this. You know, just see if you can begin to notice what goes on. My teacher, Sayadaw Utejaniya, talks about 50-50 mindfulness. On retreat, we can practice much more let go of all of the thoughts and what we're doing and just turn to the direct experience. In daily life, we have to engage with the content of our lives. We have to engage with our thoughts. We have to engage with what we're doing. While we're loading the dishwasher, we may need to be thinking about what we need to do next. We may not, but we can check that out at least if we're practicing there. So 50-50 mindfulness, 50% of the attention on what we're doing, 50% of the attention on how we are while we're doing it. So being very aware of the content of what we're doing. While we're doing chores, just checking in to our thoughts. You know, are our thoughts true? Are they necessary? Are they kind? So much of what happens in our minds is speculation and fantasy and unnecessary and unkind even to ourselves. It's stunning how, you know, when I started paying attention to my mind and saw how I spoke to myself, I thought, wow, you know, if any friend spoke to me like that, they wouldn't be my friend for very long. So often we speak to ourselves in unkind ways. And so just beginning to recognize, you know, are our thoughts true? Are they necessary? Are they kind? We may be able to begin to let go of some of those untrue, unnecessary thoughts. And if we're thinking unkind thoughts about ourselves, maybe we can remember metta, remember kindness to ourselves. So finding ways to be curious about practicing solo, doing chores or driving on the freeway. You know, maybe pick one or two things a day where you're alone, where you know you'll be alone. And see, okay, for this time that I'm driving between my home and my work, I'm going to see if I can just practice this continuity of mindfulness. I don't have much else to do here other than drive. So can I know? Can I be aware? And again, a light touch. It's just, you know, Sayadaw Utejaniya says practice awareness while walking. It's not like he puts his attention in his feet. He's just walking and being aware. So driving and being aware. Or walking in the grocery store and being aware. And then moving into a more challenging situation, structured still. I mean, one thing at one point I did as I was beginning to explore, so how does it feel to actually be mindful in relationship, in conversation? I made a mindful lunch date with a friend. We decided we'd help each other to be mindful, to practice mindfulness while we were having conversation. So this, again, this is very structured. This is like, you know, practicing basketball with a friend who is also practicing basketball. You're going to be friendly to each other. You're going to remind each other, oh, do that, or here's, this will help you. Well, the very first time I did this with my friend, we went out to lunch, and I was like, okay, I want to know what I'm going to say before I'm saying it. So the good thing about practicing this kind of way with a friend, especially around speech, one of the best tools for being mindful in speech and daily life is just take a moment to pause before you speak. If you take a moment to pause, you'll probably know what you're going to say before you say it. And that's great because so often we blurt things out without a lot of reflection and we want to take them back. And so if we know what we're going to say before we say it, we have an opportunity to pause. And yet, in conversations with coworkers or other people who aren't practicing at the same time we are, you know, a pause before speaking can also often feel odd. Or if you're in a meeting situation, this I've noticed, you know, if you're in a meeting situation, if you pause before speaking, you never get a chance to speak because people just jump in. They cut each other off. So again, to have a situation where you've got an agreement, we're going to practice this. And so I was practicing this with my friend. I was pausing before I spoke. And each time I paused, it's like I noticed. I was sitting there. We were sitting there in silence. And I don't know what he was doing, but I was sitting there thinking. And, you know, things were popping in my mind, things I wanted to say. And each time this thing popped into my mind, it was like I was ruling them out. It's like, that's got a little skew to it. That one's putting that person down. That one's trying to make myself look really good. And I sat there for, I don't know, it was a long time. It felt like a long time. And finally, I could say with mindfulness, I'm sitting here ruling out things to say because they've got a little bit of unkindness in them. So finding ways, again, being creative, creativity in daily life practice is a real, I have used the word play a lot this week. You know, it's like play, find ways to be creative and make it fun. So, you know, it's more structured kind of practicing. And then how do we actually do this in the midst of real life situations? So we're in the basketball game now. First of all, don't have very high expectations. I'll give you some basic suggestions. Like this, these are the highlights for when you're when things are happening really fast. You, first of all, like, don't have high expectations. You may not even remember mindfulness at all. Give yourself a break. But if you do remember in the midst of something challenging, first thing, just notice whatever's obvious. What's most obvious? And simple can be really good here, like tension. That often happens if you're in the midst of a charged situation. Tension, ease. Just really, really simple, kind of obvious. Okay, what's obvious? And again, don't try to hold on to the mindfulness. Ground yourself in non-harming as much as possible. You know, that desire, that wish, that inspiration to not create harm, to not hurt somebody or hurt yourself. Maybe not possible, but if you notice a strong reactivity coming up, not acting out of that may be helpful. Not speaking from that place. And then the other kind of highlight here. So, you know, notice what's obvious, ground yourself in not harming. See if you can refrain from acting out of reactivity. Low expectations. Get really good at cleaning up the mess. Learn to be humble and learn what it means to apologize. So those are the kind of highlights. I have found that in daily life, you know, it may be, I mean, we're probably not going to be able to be able to notice and be present for all of the things that happen all day long. But I have found that like the kind of highlighting of particular activities to say, okay, I'm going to try to be mindful of this one. I'm going to try to be mindful of switching between DOS and Windows. It can be helpful to, with respect to reactive emotions, pick one that you're really interested in understanding. Pick one that you want mindfulness to support you with. You want some kind of help, you know. For myself, again, in my first 3 months of practice, daily life practice was my sole practice. Was not interested in sitting meditation, but I was interested in understanding my mind because anger was so pervasive and so strong. It was making me non-functional. And so I picked anger as, okay, I'm really interested in understanding this because I would find myself frozen at the computer, unable to even think about switching between DOS and Windows. It's like, frozen there in a rage. And so I chose, I said, okay, maybe this mindfulness stuff can help me with this. And I committed to myself, I'm going to try to remember to be mindful when I'm angry. And the very first time I recognized that, I was enraged. I was frozen when I remembered. It had been going on for some time, minutes. And I was just in this world where I was acting out my revenge. And it was very painful. And the mindfulness came into that. And it's like, okay, I said I'd be mindful of this. What does that even mean, you know? What I understood in that moment was, wow, this hurts. Oh, this is painful. The next thing was, what do I do with this? And I didn't know what to do with this. I mean, I didn't have a lot of instructions, actually. And in some ways, that was really good that I didn't have a lot of instructions, because it was like, I didn't like go, oh, let me pay attention in my body. It's like, I just said, wow, this hurts. What do? I don't know. I guess I go on with my day. I guess I go back to switching between DOS and Windows. And the good thing about that was, you know, that moment of mindfulness. I mean, it took me a while to even see this part. But I had been frozen in rage, unable to even think clearly. And the mindfulness came in and said, oh, this is rage. What do? I don't know. I guess I go back to work. I could go back to work. Mindfulness had broken the cycle enough to let me continue my day. That was really powerful, actually. And, you know, so that it took me a while to even recognize that that was a power of mindfulness in that moment. It let me continue with my day. You know, I didn't try to hang on to mindfulness there. It had come, it had supported my recognition of the rage in that moment and let me go on with my day. As I practiced with this, and as you practice with a reactive emotion like this, it may happen that, you know, at least for me, it began with that, just noticing the strong rage. And what I see happening with mindfulness is we orient to a particular experience. Maybe it's impatience for you. Maybe it's procrastination. Maybe it's frustration. Maybe it's wanting to go to the refrigerator and eat. When we kind of orient mindfulness around a particular activity like that, and begin to wake up in that state of mind, at least for me, the mind, waking up into that state of mind began to like attune the mindfulness to that state of mind. And what I saw happening over the course of the next few weeks was that mindfulness woke up into anger earlier and earlier in the process. I think those few times where I woke up, you know, those first few times where I woke up into rage, it might have only been once. As far as I remember, it was only once that mindfulness woke up into that rage. And after that point, the anger was much less strong at the point when mindfulness was returning. Because it's like the mindfulness is attuning to the state. It gets sensitive to that experience. And like I said with the activities, mindfulness began to come into presence more quickly. It's like it almost like was became like a wake-up bell for me. Oh, anger, wake up, pay attention, this hurts. And over the course of several weeks, I would say no more than 3 or 4 weeks, huge understanding around insight arose. Huge releases around the being just driven by that. So I found this worked probably partly because I was so interested in paying attention to anger. I was so interested in understanding how I could not be non-functional around anger. So interest, I think, is a key. Pick something you're really interested in understanding. Light touch. Again, light touch. It's just notice what's obvious in the moment when you recognize a pattern. Maybe tightness, ease, something obvious in the body. and go on with your day. Again, don't try to hold on to the mindfulness there. Just, this is what I can know in this moment. Each time, you'll have plenty of opportunities. Plenty of opportunities. And each time mindfulness comes into being with that state, it's like you get to look at it from a different perspective. You learn something new about it. You see some condition that was leading to it. You see something about the way you were holding on to it. And the mind begins to learn. Wisdom begins to grow, even in these very small little moments of, oh, here it is again. What's happening now? You know, maybe this time it's, oh, the body feels really tight. Maybe the next time it's a fantasy of revenge, or maybe the next time it's a feeling of sadness that was underlying that anger. Each time there's something new to be seen. And we don't have to do much with it. It's like the wisdom that comes along with this interest to be curious about what is it like to be the human being that's experiencing this reactivity. That wisdom itself begins to put the pieces together and help us to understand it. Occasionally, we have a little bit of space maybe for some more exploration. In certain cases with patterns, if they arise when you're alone, you know, in my situation, you know, mostly the anger was arising because I was thinking about the person I was angry with. You know, I was by myself. I wasn't having an interaction with that person, but I was, you know, something had triggered a memory, and the memory created this whole explosive reactive pattern. So much of the time, if I was alone with something, there's a little more opportunity when you're alone to take a little bit of time, you know. And I would really encourage this to be done very lightly again, you know. But sometimes there is a little bit more time that we have to explore, a few things to look at. You know, is there any resistance to this pattern? Another relationship. So, you know, Greg talked this morning about noticing our relationship. So there's anger happening, and what's the relationship? I'm right. They're wrong. I'm right. You know, kind of that self-righteousness in relationship to anger. That's useful to know. So sometimes you can take a step back and notice, what's your relationship to the difficulty or the reactivity? Again, you know, you're in the midst of your life, so light touch with this. If you remember it, great. If not, don't give yourself a hard time. Low expectations. Another helpful tool, sometimes if you have some time, is what beliefs are operating? What do I believe about this right now? And one interesting belief that was revealed to me around my anger, you know, and this one, I didn't even ask about the belief. You know, this one was simply revealed by hanging out. It's like, oh, anger again. Oh, here it is again. Oh, again. Like little snippets over the course of weeks. At one point, the anger arose, and there was this real clear recognition of a belief that this anger is going to make the other person miserable. I might have mentioned this in the hall the other day. It actually was pretty clear in this case that it wasn't doing anything to the other person, because I happened to be in the Peace Corps. I was 7,000 miles away on a little tiny island in the middle of the South Pacific, and the person I was angry with was in California. That anger was not going to touch that person. But there was a belief there, a belief that it was going to somehow make the other person miserable. And in that moment of seeing that belief, it was so clear, first of all, that it was ludicrous, that it was an erroneous belief, and second of all, that not only was it not making the other person miserable, it was making me miserable. This was a huge wisdom understanding in that moment. So notice beliefs about the pattern. A really helpful tool around patterns that we experience a lot, you know, for me, anger was not an uncommon visitor in my life. I was in particular enraged with this one person, but anger was a big pattern in my life. And, you know, could go so far to say as I kind of was an angry person. And that's an identification, you know, like a lot of self-righteousness about things. You know, I'm right. And getting angry when other people didn't agree that I was right. So the that kind of identification with a pattern or something that we maybe think is present a lot of the time. It's like, I am an angry person. Another one for me, I'm a miserable person. I was pretty miserable being angry all the time. And that miserableness was a real identity. For a while, before I began the practice, you know, I would notice every now and then, yeah, I'm happy. And my mind would do something like, well, yeah, I'm happy now, but I know that I'm really a miserable person. Kind of, you know, that identity of being miserable, kind of dismissing the happiness. And so a really helpful tool with patterns that are pretty frequent for us, notice when they're not there. If I could have taken in, oh, happiness is here. Miserableness is not here. And not instead said, oh, but really I'm a miserable person. Ooh, creating the miserable identity immediately. Oh, no, it's happiness right now. Okay, miserableness is not here. That recognition that our patterns are not always, our frequent patterns are not always active. It's like it begins to poke holes in the belief around the identity. Like Swiss cheese, you know, it's like you get these little holes in that cheese, and you get enough holes in it, and the cheese falls apart. The identity falls apart. Also very helpful to learn some strategies, which we've been talking about here, and the strategies are very similar for not getting pulled into the rabbit hole of a difficulty. You know, sometimes patterns are very strong, and they're stronger than our capacity to be mindful. And so sometimes it's all that we can do to just, you know, I see you, anger, and I can't pay attention to you right now. So learning how to change the channel in real life, learning how to not be sucked in to the pattern. I did this a lot with the pattern of anger. Again, this pattern, I worked with this pattern for years. And I have to say, I'm not free of anger. But there's a lot less of it. And I would say it's, you know, it's not such a regular visitor anymore. So, you know, for many years it was a really regular visitor, and for many years I would recognize that if I tried to bring mindfulness to that anger, I would just get sucked into the rabbit hole. I'd pulled into the quicksand. And so at some point I recognized sometimes it's not helpful to try to be mindful of it. So learning that's discernment, the parami of wisdom right there. Sometimes it's not helpful in daily life to try to be mindful of a challenging pattern. Learning how to say not now to it. I would bow to my anger and say, I see you. I'll be mindful of you when my mindfulness gets stronger. And right now I'm going to pay attention to my feet while I'm walking. Just something to change the channel, some neutral experience that was pretty easy to connect with. Really helpful to have a tool like that. Then the last piece I'll offer, last tool, is it is really hard in daily life. Things happening so fast. And so sometimes if we find, you know, we get pulled into the reactivity of a particular situation, dynamic situation with other people, we can use a reflective practice. This is kind of like the end of the day, if you'd had something that you thought, wow, that was really hard, wish I could have been mindful there. At the end of the day, don't beat yourself up about that. But let yourself, if you're interested, again, this is about interest and whether this feels like it would be helpful for you. I found this to be helpful. So at the end of the day, let yourself meditate for, you know, let yourself settle into meditation for, say, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. And then bring up in your mind the scenario, whatever it was that happened that you wished you'd been able to be mindful for. Let yourself remember who you were with, what was happening, what you said, what the other person said. You know, give yourself 30 seconds to recreate that experience in your mind. And then let go of those thoughts and feel what's been created. Because thoughts are really powerful. And if you bring up a memory like that, you will probably feel the frustration, the anger, the confusion, the wanting, the rage. So using the tool of a settled container, it's like you're preparing yourself to work with something difficult. You let yourself settle in meditation, bring up a challenging situation, and then let yourself feel, okay, yep, I know how to do this. Whew, this is anger. This is confusion. This is the body. This is the experience of the body. Let yourself feel into those experiences. This gives you some practice with being with the kinds of emotions that come up so fast in daily life. It's a little more controlled situation. And learn also how to ways, strategies to help you settle that. Again, it may be that it comes up so fast that you can spend all of maybe 2 minutes with the challenging emotions that have come up. And then, okay, that's enough. Now I'm going to open my eyes. I'm going to put my attention on hearing, change the channel again. Just see whether you can begin to, be able to be present a little bit for some of those reactive emotions with mindfulness. That's like it's kind of like the basketball game practice. You create the situation in your mind and just see if you can begin to be mindful there. And maybe at the end of that whole exploration, reflect on how might mindfulness have helped me here? What could I have explored? What tools might have helped me there? And not to beat yourself up or set high expectations again, but just as a way of learning what might support you. So, in terms of daily life practice, for me, two paramis are key. Resolve, as I mentioned before, and patience. This is hard. As I said, you're going into the advanced retreat. Patience about just how many times you're going to forget. Patience about how hard it is to be mindful. Patience and resolve kind of can work hand in hand here. For the patience allows us to keep, yep, I'm just going to keep trying. Patience is a gentle persistence and softness of heart around how hard it is. So keep trying. I hope it can be playful. And most of all, I hope it serves you to wake up right in the midst of your life. This practice, everyone that I've spoken to has seen just how valuable this is in retreat. It can be so valuable in daily life. And so may you find that place of practice in daily life. Thank you for your attention.